term Brahmad is being used to describe both. The first, in verse 3, what is being called Brahman is Prakriti. But here in verse 26, what is being referred to is the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, or that which is completely spiritual. It's not that if you engage in full devotional service, then you come to the level of Maya. No. You transcend Maya. You transcend the modes of the prakriti, of the material nature, immediately, and come to the level of the spiritual Brahman. And then in verse 27, Krishna makes a very interesting statement, particularly in regard to people who are impersonalists and who think that Krishna has come from the impersonal Brahman. Krishna says that the impersonal Brahman has come from me. It's based on me, pratishtha aham. Pratishtha, in this context, means established, like a foundation. So the Brahman is established or founded on Krishna. And our acharyas make the point in regard to the statement, it's the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. They make an interesting point that when a person first engages in devotional service, very enthusiastically, something like what is described in verse 26, really getting into devotional service, then Krishna says that they come to the level of Brahman. So what do we notice when we first get into Krishna consciousness? We notice we become very happy. You don't actually realize Krishna, that there's Krishna standing in front of me, talking to me. You don't realize that. That may come in time. But initially you just feel blissful and your mind clears a bit like that. So, Jiva Goswami says that that the realization of the neophyte devotee of Krishna, that the devotee becomes happy and a little more clear-headed in the very early stages of Krishna consciousness. He says this is a type of Brahman realization. Because you're realizing Krishna, but you're not realizing Krishna in person completely and entering into your relationship with him. You know, as far as Krishna in person is concerned, it's rather vague. Just some happiness and, you know, like that. Any questions?
Often we
don't
think that once people have gone to the Krishna consciousness takes place in the more
conscious. Well, to become Krishna conscious, you have to transcend all the modes, including goodness. But having said that, considering that we are under the modes to a greater extent at this point, of the modes, the mode from which you can most easily enter into Krishna consciousness is the mode of goodness. If you try to enter into Krishna consciousness from the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion, it's a lot more difficult. But the mode of goodness, because there's knowledge, it's illuminating, like that, there's clear-headedness and purity, then it's like a stepping stone into the transcendental realm. It can be. Of course, if you become attached to the mode of goodness, then you'll fall down, as we've described. But if from the mode of goodness you then make efforts to get into Krishna consciousness, then relatively easily you can get into Krishna consciousness, actually. But from the mode of ignorance, to get into Krishna consciousness, it's very hard. Or the mode of passion, always disturbed by so many desires and hankerings and feelings and emotions and, you know. It's like that. But it's not exactly that the mode of goodness and Krishna consciousness are synonymous. For when the mode of goodness becomes Krishnaized, then it's known as Shuddha-sattva, pure goodness. That doesn't mean it's just like a better version of the mode of goodness. It means it's something else. It's another state. It's another state, actually. But of all the material states, that which most resembles it is the mode of goodness, and that which is most closely related. Sorry, I missed the last part. Well, yes, but not exactly. See, there's more to that statement. More than meets the eye and more than has often met the eyes of most devotees. There are three types of pious activities. One is called Bhogan Mukhi. This is from Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Actually, Prabhupada, if you read the 22nd chapter of the Madhya Leela, where the process of devotional disservice is being described to Sanatana Goswami, Prabhupada quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakura, who gives these three types of pious activity. So first, or one at least, is Bhogan Mukhi Sukriti. Sukriti means pious activity, basically. But it's Bhogan Mukhi. The result of it is bhog. You know what bhog is? Sense gratification. So that means material pious activity. Helping the starving people, building hospitals, and all that. Simply on the material platform, but it's clearly in the mode of goodness. Then he says there's Mokshan Mukhi Sukriti. Pious activity, which is of the nature of liberation, and it produces a result, not actually of liberation, but it sort of helps you advance in the general direction of liberation. So Mokshan Mukhi Sukriti means like detachment, tolerance, peacefulness. These are pious qualities. They're conducive for liberation. They're conducive for liberation. Then there is Bhakti Unmukhi Sukriti. These are pious activities which are devotional by nature. And they produce as a result like an impetus towards Krishna consciousness. But they are devotional by nature. They're not material pious activities by nature. They're devotional by nature. So this means giving a donation to the devotees, helping devotees, taking prasad, sponsoring some Krishna conscious activity. It's pious, but it's actually of a devotional nature. Now you may not really know that yes, here are the devotees, and if I give money to them, I'll advance towards devotional service. You may not know. You may not have any idea. But the fact is that the nature of the activity, it's related to Krishna. Your awareness of that fact is irrelevant. But the fact is that it is related to Krishna. So the result that is produced is a result which brings you closer to Krishna. So it's that type of pious activity which brings a person to devotional service. Whereas Bhogan Mukhi Sukriti, just plain material pious activity, won't help. Like, you know, there's one verse in the Bhagavatam in which I think Sukadeva or someone is reflecting about the cowherd boys, that here they are playing with Krishna. So they ask the question, or the Sanskrit is Krita Punya Punja. What sort of pious activities did these boys perform in their previous lifetimes? So that does not mean that they gave a lot of charity to the hungry people and all that, and they just day and helped the blind people and helped old ladies across the road. It doesn't mean that. It means they performed a lot of devotional or Krishna-related activity. They may not have known. Some they may have known, some they may not have known. Whether they knew or not doesn't really matter. But they performed that type of activity which is called pious. One last question, Dr. James.
Verse 17, what is real knowledge?
Well, it would mean some real knowledge about the material world, basically. Because Prabhupada in the purport is tending to apply it in terms of the person who's in the mode of goodness, but also influenced by Krishna consciousness. For such a person, it would mean real Krishna conscious knowledge would come. But if a person is actually simply in the mode of goodness, then they'll get some understanding, like Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur was saying, that, oh, I'm above passion and ignorance. He'll see it. He'll understand what is passion and ignorance. And he'll realize, yes, I'm above it. And then he'll feel happy. Oh, good. And he may even feel proud. So it's more like that. So I think we should end there. For tomorrow, so bear in mind what I said I was going to ask you questions about for the test and work on it. For tomorrow, please read chapters 15 and 16. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The Supreme Person. And it begins with a description of this material world, a metaphorical type of description, in terms of it being like a tree. Not actually a tree, but a reflection of a tree. A reflection of a banyan tree. So we've passed out these little notes, which they're analyzing all the different statements because they're through the first couple of verses and purports. It would take us a while to draw them out. So I just drew them out myself. If you don't have one of these, please come and get one. So, we've heard in the 13th chapter, there's a description of the material world, or not just the material world, but description of the situation here, material nature, the living being, the super soul. And in the 13th chapter, Krishna said that the soul is entangled in the material nature because of the three modes. But in the 13th chapter, there were no clear statements about the three modes, what they are, how they work. It was just stated that there are these three modes, and the living beings are caught up in them. So then, the 14th chapter, it was giving a fairly elaborate description of what these modes are. Krishna said at the beginning of the 14th chapter that it's very important to understand this knowledge. He said it's the very best knowledge. Because in order for us to become liberated or really come to the platform of pure devotional service, we have to learn how to disentangle ourselves from the material world, or in other words, from the three modes. Now in chapter 15, Krishna is giving a further elaboration about the material world and how we should relate to the material world. And he's describing it as a banyan tree, or not actually as a banyan tree, but as a reflection of a banyan tree. He says the root is up, the branches are down. Prabhupada asks,
the question, what sort of tree have you ever seen with its roots going up and its branches going down? Well, there is no such tree, but you may see it as a reflection of a real tree. So that's what this material world is. It's a reflection of the reality. And the reality is the spiritual realm. So Krishna is saying in the first few verses that we should understand, it's helpful to understand the material world in terms of its being like a reflection or like a banyan tree. And he describes different parts of the material world as if they're parts of the tree. And that's what is on these little sheets of paper that we passed out. So let's have a look at these little pieces of paper. The subjects which are described on this little piece of paper, they're found in the first two verses. But to simplify things, we've presented it in this form. So let us begin. The ground, what is the ground of the material world, or like the base of the whole thing, the cause? Desire. Everything is grounded in our desire. Then there is the main root, the one which is going up. So where is that located? It's in Brahmaloka, which is the topmost planet of this material realm. Or alternatively, Prabhupada says, it's rooted into the total material substance. Then there are other roots which go down. The main root is going up into the top levels of this material realm. The other roots are going down, and they're going into the human planetary systems, like here, in the forms of fruitive activities, attachment, aversion, all sorts of efforts, material efforts, which particularly go on this level. In the higher levels, generally, people are not endeavoring so fruitively. They're enjoying the results of all their fruitive efforts. And in the lower planets, people are not really endeavoring fruitively. They're suffering the results of their fruitive activities on this level. But on this level, the middle planetary systems, this is where all the intense materialistic activity is going on. So these secondary roots, these other roots, they're rooted into the human planetary systems in the forms of various attachments and aversions. And from them come different sufferings and enjoyments. The branches of the different planetary systems, upper and lower, the leaves of the Vedic hymns, the twigs of the sense objects, the tips of the branches of the senses, the fruits are the results of one's activities, the results of one's dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. And what nourishes it all? What is feeding it and sustaining it? The modes. Now, we want you to learn this because this is for one question in our test. You're going to have to be able to present what is on this piece of paper, to understand the material world in terms of it being the banyan tree or the reflection of the banyan tree. So, we're all caught up here. And Krishna says in the third verse that you have to cut it down. How? Through detachment. As we've mentioned on so many occasions now, in yoga, the principal activity in yoga is detachment from this material world. That is a characteristic of all types of yoga, be they personal or impersonal or whatever they may be. Where there is detachment, then one can take it that this is a form of yoga. So you cut down your attachment to this material world with the weapon of detachment. Now Krishna makes an interesting point in that verse 3 or 3 and 4, that you can't see the real form of this tree in this world because you're so caught up in it. There's a well-known saying in Western civilization that you can't see the forest for the trees. Some of you would have heard that. You're so deeply in the forest that you can't see the whole forest. You can't see the whole situation because you're caught up in the immediate situation in the middle of so many trees. So we are caught up in this material world. And we can't see the whole situation because we're so caught up and attached to and absorbed in the very immediate situation, our particular position in the forest of existence or in the banyan tree. The banyan tree is given here not just any sort of tree, because the banyan tree, sometimes banyan trees grow very big. And you can't really tell where does it begin, where does it end. One devotee told me about how there used to be a banyan tree, supposedly, which began halfway from here to Calcutta. It began. That's, I don't know, 60 or 70 kilometers away from here. And it began there. And then the same tree continued on till the boundary, the border of Calcutta. Delhi. Well, that makes it even more fantastic. Anyway, the idea is that a banyan tree can be very big, and it can be very hard to figure out what is really what, and how is it all working. So that's the idea here. But of course, we're being told about this tree in terms of it being a reflection. And wherever there's a reflection, it means that there must be a real tree. That's very important. In this way, Krishna is indicating the spiritual realm, that there is a spiritual realm. And that the spiritual realm looks very, very similar to this realm, almost exactly the same. But the spiritual realm is real, and this realm is just a reflection. The reflection, you know, if you have a tree, a reflection of a tree, and you see in the reflection, you see some nice fruit, and you think, oh, let me pick the fruit and eat it. So if you try and pick the fruit out of the reflection, you'll see there's nothing there. So it's like that. The material world looks very good, looks very promising. We can have a great time. Looks like it's got so many facilities. But when you try and grab hold of it and get something out of it, you see there's nothing there. Why does it look so good? Because it's a reflection of the real tree. And the real tree is very nice. Very, very nice, actually. But the reflection, it's simply superficial, and there's no substance to it whatsoever. So unfortunately, that's the position in material life. People are trying to draw something, some pleasure, out of the reflection, but the reflection doesn't have the capacity to supply any pleasure or anything at all. There's nothing there, basically. So therefore, we should turn to the real tree. And in verse 4, or the second half of the translation of verses 3 and 4, Krishna indicates the spiritual realm. And in verse 5, he does the same thing. He indicates the real thing. Verse 5, he points out that if you become purified, if you actually become detached and become free of all the inequities of material existence, then you can enter into the eternal kingdom. Particularly, if you know how to surrender. I thought it was rather nice yesterday. Hanumat Preshaka Swami was talking about how devotees come along and join ISKCON, and they say, like, here I am, I surrender. I'm surrendering to Krishna. when they join the temple. Like, you know, when you've joined, that means you've surrendered. You're now the same surrendered soul that Krishna's talking about in Bhagavad Gita. Fully surrendered. But I think, as we all know, it's not quite that easy to surrender. There's a lot more to it than just saying, oh, I surrender. Like that. There's a lot more to it. You have to know how to surrender. Prabhupada referred to the process of surrender. He called it an adventure in surrender. An adventure. Meaning it's a whole thing you go through this. It's mainly your mind, I guess, really. Work your way out of your conditioning and work your way out of your attachments and try to become more attached to Krishna bit by bit. So you have to know how to surrender. That's why Krishna is giving this extra jnana here. So that we know how, like, to detach ourselves. What is the material world? In order to really detach yourself from the material world, you have to know what it is. Otherwise you can maintain attachments to it, but you won't be aware that you're attached. Like so many people think that to develop love for Krishna is the same thing as developing love for a member of the opposite sex. They think it's the same thing in so many cases. But that love, we all know, within this material world, that love is not really love, it's more lust. That we are looking at, people are looking at each other and within themselves they're thinking, what can I get from this person? Yeah. So verse 62, Krishna says, you have to surrender to him utterly, full surrender to the Super Soul, and by his grace, not by my grace, but by his grace, the Super Soul's grace, you can achieve the ultimate goal of life. And in verse 63, Krishna says that thus I have explained to you knowledge which is still more confidential. So this was more confidential, and the other section, what was it, 49 to 55, is the confidential knowledge. So the confidential knowledge was dealing with what? Brahman. Now the more confidential knowledge is dealing with Paramatma. So actually in the purport to verse 63, Prabhupada makes it quite clear. The Lord has already explained to Arjuna the knowledge of Brahma-bhuta, Brahman realization. One who is in the Brahma-bhuta condition is joyful. He never laments, nor does he desire anything. That is due to confidential knowledge. And now in this section here, Krishna also discloses knowledge of the Super Soul. This is also Brahman knowledge, knowledge of Brahman, but it's superior. So it's more confidential. According to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Krishna now, having spoken verse 63, says to Arjuna, all right, that's all. Now I've finished Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is now finished, after verse 63. But then Arjuna asks that, you know, do you think you could just make it clear to me what is the real essence of all these things? Because we've just sort of poured it all out on my head again, all at the same time. Could you just please make it clear what is really like, you know, the essence, really the heart of the matter. So then Krishna says, all right, because you're my very dear friend, I'll now tell you the supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge, guhyatamam. Confidential is guhyam. More confidential is guhyataram. And most confidential is guhyatamam. Guhyam, guhyataram. And Guhyata Mam. These are the three Sanskrit terms.
So Krishna is now going to give Sarva Guhyatama, the most confidential. So what is that? Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta Madhyaji Mam Namaskar Mame Vaishyasi Satyante Patijane Priyasine. Always think of me, not him, the Supersoul, but me, Krishna. Two-armed Krishna. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage to me. And thus, what will happen?